10. The man speaking is dressed in a blood-soaked trench coat. He's groomed and tailored, but I don't think he's any stranger to violence and death. He seems fairly unshaken by the carnage surrounding us, or by the fact that he's outnumbered 4-1 if you count our friend. The man being threatened is Arthur, a knife held to his throat. Charles, brave as he was, lies dead at his feet. I adjust my aim toward the man holding the knife. Looking down the pilfered rifle scope, I could shoot him. It would be easy, and I'm not even that worried about what happens to Arthur. Pretty sure he was meant to die here today. Who are you? The man scrunches up his face like I've just asked to have a look up his skirt. Then he says, Sheriff Don Chafin. I know that name. He played a major role in the infamous Coal Wars. To some, he was a hero. To others, a devil. All depended on whether or not your lineage was steeped in coal or not. He was a figurehead of the outside world, meddling in coal culture and in Appalachia. If not for him, the confrontation that led to Charles and his men fleeing west through the wilderness might have turned out differently. I also know he didn't die today. Chafin survived well into his 60s. I have no quarrel with you, I say, lowering the rifle, much to Arthur's dismay. Afraid I have a quarrel with you, the sheriff says.
We were just passing through,
Cassie says, approaching with a slight limp. You okay? I ask her. She rubs her thigh. Charlie horse. I glance up at Levi, knife in hand, standing a few feet behind Cassie. I give him a nod of thanks, which he returns in kind. If your men hadn't opened fire, you don't get to speak to me, Chafin says, seething at Cassie and revealing himself to be a racist and an asshole. It's likely that Chafin's father or grandfather fought in the Civil War. In our present, resentment toward the North and those freed by the war still burns hot in some areas of the South, never mind in the 1920s, when subjugation had only evolved into segregation. We shouldn't expect to come across anyone who's, what's the hip new lingo? Woke. Can I kill him? Levi says, stepping toward Chafin and catching all of us off guard. His dander is raised something fierce. The impact of taking a life has yet to settle on him. When it does, Chafin presses the knife harder against Arthur's throat. The blade would have to cut through equal parts beard and skin to end the man's life, but it looked sharp enough to do the job. I hold my hands out, one toward Chafin, one toward Levi. You're missing the point, Sheriff. We don't know that man. I point to Arthur. And we don't know any of the men you all gunned down. We were just passing through. Wrong place, wrong time. You don't need to kill him, and I don't need to kill you. Take your man, go back the way you came. You'll never see any of us again. I hope. Chafin glares at me for a moment, no doubt weighing his options and whether or not I can be trusted. Then he reels back and clubs Arthur in the back of the head. He lets the man collapse at his feet and then waits with a tense face. When I don't shoot him, he sighs with relief. If you all really stumbled into this mess, you've got shit for luck. You have no idea, I say, looking over the field of death. But I've seen you fight. He's looking at me. Could use more men like you, especially on account of how you gunned down half my posse. I'm sorry about that, I say. Couldn't be helped, he says. Wrong time, wrong place, right? I nod and hold the rifle up. Mind if I hold on to this? I ain't got no need for it, he says, looking at the dead and the collection of guns on the ground. Got more than I can carry already. Take what you need, I say to Cassie and Levi. They set out among the dead, collecting gear. I look about for a horse or two, but the steeds have all fled. All but one lying on its side, struggling to breathe. Now that the fight is over, I regret having to shoot the animals, and I'm not about to let this one suffer. After crouching to pet its forehead and whispering an apology, I stand, take aim, and fire a single round into the horse's head. When I look up, a stray tear in my eye, I note Chafin's attention. Seen war before, Chafin says. Haven't you? A slow nod is my only reply. Likewise, he says, picking up a dropped revolver and holstering it. We're square. I won't come looking for you. Appreciate that, I say, and I do. Having killed so many of his men, I fully expected Chafin to return with more. If we were still here in this time upon his return, the killing would have resumed, and I'd have been forced to take his life, too. But so close to the end of World War I, the respect for its veterans is powerful. I might not have fought in the war to end all wars,
but I've killed and bled for the same country. Close enough. After pillaging the dead for ammo, water canteens, supplies, and jackets, in case the temperature changes again, I lead Cassie and Levi away, leaving Chafin to regroup and try to figure out a way to transport his prisoner back to Virginia. Downhill, a horse whinnies. I think about going after it, but Chafin is going to need it more than us. His journey is long, and ours, if we're not interrupted again, is just over a mile uphill, though it's starting to feel a lot farther. One step forward, two steps back, in time. I smile at the thought, but don't say it aloud. Now's not the time for making jokes. Hell, on a good day, Cassie would slug me for a joke that bad. When we've put a few hundred feet between Chafin and us, and I'm confident he can no longer see us, I stop and sit atop a fallen tree. Take a minute. We should keep moving, Levi says. He's doing his best to appear unshaken, but even a seasoned veteran can be left exhausted by combat. Not because of physical or emotional weakness, but because adrenaline wreaks havoc with the body, especially as the effects fade. I hold up my hands so he can see them. Both are shaking, as are the muscles in my thighs and stomach. Feels like Rocky Balboa is using my insides for a punching bag. Adrenaline does a lot of good things in bad situations, increasing heart rate and blood pressure, expanding the lungs and throat, and allowing the blood to be more oxygen-rich. All that fuel is pumped directly into the muscles and brain, letting people think faster, react faster, and on occasion do the impossible, like lifting a car. But when the adrenaline wears off, blood sugar plummets, leaving muscles feeling weak and shaky. If you don't let your body ease back to normalcy when you try to climb this mountain, your muscles are going to cramp up. Won't make it far when that happens. We need a minute. Cassie is accustomed to following my lead when it comes to the job. Not so much in any other aspect of my life, but when it comes to combat and security, she knows the depth of my experience. While Cassie stretches, Levi takes a seat, his back to me. Kid's got too much pride. Doesn't want me to see him going through the same shakes afflicting me. You did what you had to do, I say to him, unbuttoning my shirt and trying not to wince from the pain in my left arm. I'm not sure how much damage the buckshot did. The arm is still fully functional, but the pain is ripe. Ain't no shame in it. Didn't say there was. There's an edge to his voice. A few hours ago, he was terrified to point an old gun in my face, and now he's stabbed a man to death. And by the looks of it, he's kept the knife, sheathing it on his hip, using a belt he wasn't wearing earlier. I remember what it was like, I tell him, first time I took a life. He sits silent, but I can tell he's listening. Wasn't too different from this, an ambush. But not everyone I was with that day handled themselves as well as you. I look at Cassie. As both of you. She gives me a weary grin. While I wouldn't wish this shit on anyone, I'm glad the two of you are with me. Cassie thumps her foot into Levi's thigh. He don't give out compliments very often, so thank the man, or he's liable to start offering critique instead. You know what critique is, right? Levi huffs and smiles, pushes Cassie's foot away. Seems to me that you should be the one thanking me. The good humor drains out of Cassie's face. She crouches down beside Levi, and for a moment I think she's going to ream him out. Then she says, thanks, honestly. You saved my life. She sits down beside him as a further peace treaty. I'm not sure she would have if she'd known about the cougar comment. She digs into a satchel bag taken from one of the dead men. I focused mostly on ammunition for the rifle, but I took a coat that's now tied around my waist and a full water canteen. While they're distracted with the satchel, I remove my shirt. If the wound is bad, I'd rather not be doted on. Best case scenario, I'll be able to tend to it without either of them noticing. My triceps is bloodied, but the flow has stemmed. I got lucky. With a twist of skin and muscle, the wound is revealed. Three of them, actually. Two fine lines reveal where buckshot gouged divots in my skin, but failed to puncture. The third is a small dark red hole surrounded by hot pink skin. I give it a pinch and wince when I feel the small pellet buried a half inch inside. Cassie extracts a wad of ancient dollar bills from the satchel. She wiggles them in the air. Fat load of good these'll do us. Levi takes the money, thumbing through it. What do you reckon this is worth in our time? Couldn't say, I tell him, and I don't really care. Money is the least of our concerns. Neither Cassie nor I complain when he pockets the cash. A pocket watch comes next. Cassie gives it a once-over and tosses it back to me without looking. I catch the watch in my right hand and turn it around. The time reads 11:20. Given that the sun is still shining, I'm guessing that's AM. My forehead furrows a moment before a thought occurs to me. I lift my wrist and check the time. 11:20. We're being moved through years, but it appears the time of day is ticking on as usual. Weird, but not helpful, and not worth mentioning. I pocket the watch and turn my attention back to the wound. While Cassie and Levi are still distracted, I grit my teeth, pinch the meat of my triceps between my finger and thumb, and squeeze toward the buckshot like I'm wringing out a tube of toothpaste. Pain swells as blood begins flowing from the small wound. I nearly shout when my fingers reach the buckshot. It resists for a moment, but then slips toward the entry wound. A moment later, the metal bead pops out of my arm and falls to the ground. I hold my sleeve over the small wound and apply pressure. A block of paper wrapped in twine emerges from the satchel before Cassie discards the empty leather husk. She unties the knot, opens the paper, and reveals several strips of dried meat.
"Well, slap my ass and call me Nancy,"
Levi says before plucking up a piece of meat. I don't think that's a... Before I can finish my warning, he bites off a chunk of meat and all but melts in delight.
"It ain't rancid," he says between bites. "Tastes fresh, tender as shit, too."
When he notices Cassie and me watching him in cautious disgust, he stops mid-chew and says,
"Ain't no bacteria around today that ain't a super version of itself in our time."
Then he goes right on chewing. "He's got a point," Cassie says. My stomach growls, waging war against my mental defenses. Eating food from the 1920s that isn't wine or whiskey sounds like a bad idea, unless you're in 1920. I lift my sleeve away and watch for fresh blood. When none flows, I slip my shirt back on and reach my hand out. "Give me a piece." Cassie takes one for herself and hands another to me. I give it a sniff, and the war against hunger is all but lost. The meat smells of salt, pepper, garlic, and maple syrup. The protein and sugar will fuel our remaining hike and keep us from having to forage, assuming our uphill journey isn't interrupted again. I'm still not convinced it's the best idea, but I no longer think it's a bad idea. After my first bite, all trepidation fades. 10 minutes later, the meat that was likely supposed to sustain the man carrying it for days is all gone. Belly full, I lean back in a long stretch, careful not to overextend my left arm, feeling ready to head out again.
"Thought your face looked familiar."
I open my eyes to find Chafin standing a few feet away, revolver leveled at my exposed core.
"Anyone of you even twitches, and your boss man gets a hole in his chest."
"Why are you back?" I ask. "Thought we had an agreement."
"Old Arthur started talking when he woke up," Chafin says. "Offered a trade, information for his freedom. Man's as thick as redwood, believe me when I agreed to it. Then he reveals who you really are, Mr. McCoy. Wouldn't you know it, my ma was a Hatfield, and we know better than most how quick with the tongue you McCoys can be. So I've decided to not believe your story."
"And now you plan to bring us all in?" I ask.
"I'm fixing to shoot you, actually."
He raises his gun, and for a moment I know I'm going to die. But then he hesitates, not because of Cassie or Levi, but because the air fills with the sound of angry bees rushing down from the mountaintop.